Welcome. I am Pastor Kyle. I am so glad that you chose to join us today. We are going to be in the book of Judges, but before we do that, just one last quick announcement. If you did not know that today is the day we are starting our membership class for anybody who is interested in joining in membership, and it is not too late to join. If you are interested in that, all you have to do is stay through the extra hour. They'll be doing Financial Peace University in here. Kids Club will be back there. And then starting at around 11:30, we're going to do our membership class. We'll be doing this book, I Am a Church Member. We're going to be covering the first three chapters today. And if you are just curious what it means to be a member of a church, or if you are actually interested in joining, we would welcome to have you join us. With that in mind, I want to take us back in time. I want you to think back on your life and think, have you ever had a bad boss? Just a terrible boss, someone who is a bad, Scott, you're not allowed to say yes to, but someone who is your employer, who was not an enjoyable experience to have them as your leader. For me, this happened to me when I was in college, actually between college and grad school. I found myself without work, and I was just picking up small jobs here and there, and I actually worked for a bakery down in Scranton, Pennsylvania. If you've never worked for a bakery, bakeries oftentimes make you start at stupid early times. I had to be at work for 4 a.m. Thing is, the bakery was an hour away from my house, so I had to be there. I had to get up and be out of my house by 3 a.m. to be there for my 4 a.m. shift. This bakery, though, wasn't just a bakery. It was also connected to a convenience store. The convenience store slash gas station would stay open till around 10, 11 o'clock at night. And this manager really, really loved, for some reason, asking people to work close opens, which means I would work there till 10, 11 o'clock at night, go home, an hour home, and then have to come back, leave my house at 3 a.m. to come back to be there for 4. She also enjoyed hiring her friends most of the time, so most of the time, most of the people I worked with were like 60-year-old women, which is not a problem for me. I grew up in traditional Baptist churches. Middle age is 80. but I was the young guy at 30. I was the young guy. And as such, I got all the jobs that none of them wanted to do, like get down on your hands and knees and scrape with a steel wool around the edges of the shelves. And by the time it was done, I actually tried to give my 2 weeks notice as I was leaving because I got another job somewhere else. I was really happy to be moving on. And she got mad at me and she yelled at me and she like just started tearing me down and like telling me how bad of work. I'm like, okay then, I quit. Like, I'm done. And I left. It was a terrible boss. And she brought me down, like personally, she brought me down emotionally, and yet still not the worst boss of all time. The worst boss of all time is this.
Dwight has been acting manager for 3 months now? Nope, a week. Just feels like 3 months. Let's see, we all have to punch into a time clock, which is very old, very strong, and has the slot about the size of a finger. We were all given new business cards, big enough to set us apart from the competition, which is how I learned that our titles are all now junior employee. Our lunch breaks are staggered to prevent wasting time. Mine's at 10:30, and I find that the first hour of the day goes by a lot quicker than the second 7 hours.
Stop stalling.
There's been a problem with some people sharing copier codes. Your copier code is a distinct 21-digit number that is unique to you and you only, okay? Don't share it. Joe Bennett, our CEO, will be here today for a high-level meeting involving Gabe and myself.
Ooh, about what?
That's on a need-to-know basis.
I thought I needed to know for your calendar.
General meet and greet. So I expect you to be on your best behavior, which means none of you will be insubordinate, nor will you foment insurrection.
Question. If we've already fomented insurrection, may we be grandfathered in?
Define foment.
You define foment.
Please take note of the new color coding system.
One.
Wow, you really embraced the whole Bond villain aesthetic.
Oh, Jim.
The gun is a Beaumont Adams. Joe collects them. I thought we could have some nice small talk about it. And the prawn is a rescue. And the desk.
The desk is a replica of Uday Hussein's desk. I saw a picture in Newsweek. Listen, I'm a very busy man. Let's get right down to business.
Okay.
Joe is coming later today. I cannot have a subordinate trying to make me look stupid. Okay? I need you to promise me that you'll be on your best behavior.
I promised other people that I'd be on my worst behavior. And I gave my word, so.
Don't make me fire you.
You can't fire me. You're acting manager, not office manager, so you have no firing powers.
Don't make me pre-fire you.
You wouldn't dare.
Watch this. You're pre-fired. And when I'm promoted, you'll be full fired.
If you get promoted. And if you haven't fallen in love with me by then.
What?
If I had thought that there was a real chance that Dwight would be permanent manager, I would have pre-quit. And you might be saying to yourself, well, that's pretty premature to think. But I always say it's better to be pre-prepared.
All right. Bad leadership can lead you to some pretty terrible places. And that's what we're going to see in the book of Judges today. If you have not been with us up till now, let me just bring you up to speed. We have seen a few themes that have crept up. We are in chapter 9. And so far, we have seen that the person that we really should want leading us in our lives is God. The Israelites keep turning to different humans to lead them, and even still not even obeying what God has called them to do through those leaders. Really, the person that they should have wanted from the get-go is God. And that is a theme that actually continues past Judges. You're going to see it in 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Chronicles, even through the Kings, 1 and 2 Kings. And we saw that when God gives us a command, we must obey 100%. Because consistently we have seen Israel make the decision to obey at about 70%. And what we've come to learn through watching their example is the idea that 99% obedience is 100% disobedience. And that has really caused problems for them as they've gone forward, and that's only going to get worse as we go. And then as Audrey did a great job last week laying out the second half of Gideon's life, what we've seen is that the nation of Israel at this point in their history is really starting to cycle downwards. With every judge, things seem to get a little bit worse and a little bit worse and a little bit worse. In fact, Gideon is oftentimes referred to as the watershed of the book. See, thinking that everything before him is generally good and everything after him gets generally bad, but watershed implies that everything was going up on one side and everything comes down on the other, and that's really not the case with the book of Judges. Everything started high, and it has just been one step down after the next. And from this point forward, things are going off the cliff quickly. Which is why I want to take one last opportunity to appeal to the parents in the room. If you are here and you have kids, I encourage you, please read ahead in the book of Judges. See what is coming next before we get there. Because if you desire for us to provide extra childcare when we cover some of the topics that are coming up through the rest of the book, we are happy to do that. We are just asking that you come have a conversation with us so that we know that that is necessary. We are going to keep it PG-13. We are not going to go crazy up here, but I want to give you that opportunity to request extra childcare if you think that it is necessary. Because at this point in the book, things are going downhill fast. In fact, the next chapter, chapter 9, the one we're going to be talking about today, doesn't even move on to the new judge yet. We're going to be discussing a guy named Abimelech. Abimelech is the son of Gideon. We saw him come up briefly at the end of last week's chapter as Audrey was wrapping up. And what we saw was that Gideon had over 70 sons. Not 70 kids, 70 sons. So playing the odds of 50-50, he might have had upwards of 140 children. Because it said he had multiple wives. Abimelech is not one of them. See, Abimelech is the son of Gideon through his concubine in the land of Shechem. And that's very important to know as we start this chapter because it says, now Abimelech, the son of Jerubbabel, that's Gideon, remember that his name Jerubbabel, was one who contends against Baal, was given to him as a nickname. Abimelech, the son of Jerubbabel, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's family, say in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbabel rule over you, or that one rule over you? Remember also that I am your bone and I am your flesh. So the people of Israel loved Gideon, loved Zerubbabel. They thought he was one of the greatest leaders they'd had. In spite of his failures, in spite of his mistakes at the end, they loved him. And they were going to let one of his sons become king of Israel. And they naturally would have picked one of his firstborns, one of his natural sons, but Abimelech says to the people of Shechem, one of the main cities in Israel at this point in time, hey, I think you should let me be king instead. You should choose me to rule over you instead. Remember, I'm from here. All of Zerubbabel's, all of Gideon's other kids came from far away. You don't want one of those far away people. Remember, this is Israel. It's not that far away. One of those far away people ruling over you. You want one of your own, one of your flesh, one of your bones, one of you. Never mind that I'm not really one of his kids from one of his marriages, but I'm one of you. So pick me. Let me rule over you. And his mother's relatives, his in-laws, etc., they spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of the leaders of Shechem. And their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech. For they said, he is our brother. He's one of us. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-Bereth, which is with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless followers who followed him. So they decide, because of Abimelech's relatives, Gideon's in-laws, they all get together and they convince the city, yes, let's pick Abimelech. And they give him some money so that he can go out, and he hires thugs, brutes, mercenaries, people who are really big, but not all that nice, who are going to fight on his behalf and help him become king in Israel. And he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Zerubbabel, 70 men on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Zerubbabel, was left, for he hid himself. And all the leaders of Shechem came together, and all Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. So with these mercenaries, with these thugs that Abimelech has hired, he goes to where Gideon was from, Ophrah, and gathers all of his sons, 70 of them, and beheads every last one. Just mass slaughter of his family. One, Jotham, that's why I said at least 71, because he had 70 that have been killed, plus Jotham, plus then Abimelech, is the youngest son of Zerubbabel. He was the last one that was left. He gets away. He goes and hides himself. And the leaders of Shechem come together. They make Abimelech king. And now the story can start. Because when it was told to Jotham, the one who gets away, he went and he stood on the top of Mount Gerizim. And he cries aloud and he says to them, listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. So Jotham here is about to give a story. And it's actually going to be a prophetic story. He's telling a story that is actually going to predict what's going to happen. So what he's saying is, listen to me so that maybe when you cry out for mercy, when you ask for forgiveness, maybe God will hear you. If you hear my story, if you listen to it, maybe God will take mercy on you. And here's the story that Jotham tells, right? The trees once went out to anoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, which would have been one of the best trees in Israel. Olive trees still grow there to this day. It's wonderful. Reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, shall I leave my abundance, by which the gods and men are honored, and go hold sway over the trees? So the trees get together. They ask the olive tree to be their king, and the olive tree says to them, no, I'm not going to be your king. Look, I was put on this earth for a purpose. And my purpose is so good that it pleases God. It pleases human beings. Like I have been given a purpose on this earth, and it is not to rule over some trees. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep on my purpose. And the tree said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us. But the fig tree says to them, shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees? And the tree said to the vine, you come and reign over us. But the vine said to them, shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees? But so both these other trees, fig trees, vines, grapevines, say to them, no, we have been given a purpose. We provide sweetness. We provide good things, good wine that cheers God and men. And we're not going to leave the purpose that God has given us just to go be king over some trees. We're not going to do it. But then all the trees said to the bramble, you come and reign over us. And the bramble says to the trees, if in good faith you are anointing me king over you, then come, take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. There are a few funny things here. First, what is the purpose of a bramble? So vines, purpose, create grapes, create wine, create grape juice, grape. Figs produce figs, which are lovely and give us fig Newtons. And then you like olive trees gives us olives and olive oil. Great. Purpose of a bramble. Thorns, ouch, hurt, pain. The only purpose of the bramble is to cause hurt and pain, to keep predators away who would normally eat the things and cause pain. So the bramble's like, hey, you want me to be king? You want to bring pain into your life? That's what I do. I bring pain. That is my whole purpose. So let's bring some pain. In fact, if you don't make me king, I'm going to bring fire on you. And I'm going to burn you down. I'm going to burn you down and devour it like the cedars, like a forest fire, just clearing house. While the others are like, no, we have a purpose. We're more important. We're not going to go be king. He's like, nope, you better make me king or there's going to be major hurt. Now, therefore. Now, Jotham's going to give the meaning behind his story. He says, if you acted in good faith and integrity when you made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Zerubbabel and his house, and have done to him as his deeds deserved. The writers in the room are about to cringe like crazy because he has this long, like, interjected paragraph, not even just a sentence, but a whole paragraph. Because if you've treated Zerubbabel and his kids well, because my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered him from the hand of Midian, and you've risen up against my father's house on this day and have killed his sons, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech the son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem because he is your relative. Like, we all know what you did. He's reminding them, you kind of haven't treated Zerubbabel well. You really haven't treated his kids well. At least I don't consider the mass murder of 70 of his sons to be treating him well. But if you think in good faith that you have done right by Gideon. Now then, if you have acted in good faith and integrity with Zerubbabel, and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech. And let him also rejoice in you. I wish you nothing but the best, he says. But if not, if you have not treated Gideon well, if you have not treated the sons of Gideon well, then let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo. And let fire come out from the leaders of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer, and lived there because of Abimelech, his brother. So Jotham delivers this story, which is meant to be prophetic. And he says, look, you have not treated Gideon's family well. Gideon's family deserved honor. You have murdered 70 of his sons. This is not okay. And as a result, if you make Abimelech king, if you follow Abimelech as your king, things are going to go badly for you. In fact, what's going to happen is Abimelech is going to serve as the destroyer of Shechem, the ones who put him in charge. But Shechem is also going to serve as the downfall of Abimelech, the one that they put in charge. And then this is an interesting thing right here at the end. And Jotham runs away and fled and went to Beer and lived there because of Abimelech, his brother. The thing that's interesting about that is when you look at the history of Shechem, this city, we saw this if you were here during our Joshua series, and if you want to go back, you can check, they're all online. What we saw was that Joshua actually established the city of Shechem towards the end of the book. Shechem was originally designed and created as a city of refuge. It was actually meant to be a place that if somebody was in trouble and needed to be safe from mobs that wanted them dead, Shechem was the place they were supposed to go to for safety. Shechem was the safe place. And now, because of Abimelech, and because of the people and the leaders of Shechem, The one who actually needs the protection, the one who needs protection from the mobs who want him dead, has to flee from Shechem, run away from Shechem to go find safety elsewhere. And Abimelech ruled over Israel for 3 years. And God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. Jotham's prophecy is coming true. And the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Zerubbabel might come and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. God is blessing, and God is making Jotham's prophecy come to fruition. They are now starting to quarrel, Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops. They're actually starting to go out to battle against their own leader, their own king. Civil war is breaking out in Israel. And they robbed all who passed them, by them along the way. And it was told to Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives. And the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. A few different things here. First, Gaal, this new guy, shows up in town. He's got a big family. And everyone kind of likes him. Everyone really thinks that he's got some potential. So they start putting their trust in him, their confidence in him. They start making him a leader. And they all go out and they gather the grapes. It's harvest time. It's basically Thanksgiving in Israel. And they go in and they drink at the house of their God. Notice the lowercase g here. That's not a mistake. The writers of the ESV in particular are trying to point out the fact that this is not the God of the Bible. We are already 3 years into Abimelech's rule, seeing idolatry creep back into the habits of Israel. And they ate and drank, and together they reviled Abimelech. They're talking bad about their boss, right? They're getting a little drunk. They're getting a little tipsy. And everybody's starting to talk about how much they really don't like this Abimelech guy. And Gaal, their leader, the son of Ebed, says, "So who is Abimelech anyway? Who is Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Zerubbabel? And is not Zabel his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? Would that this people were under my hand. If I was in charge, things would be different. Then I would remove Abimelech. And I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out. You say, let's go, Abimelech. Let's fight. Make me the leader and I will fight on your behalf. I will get rid of this Abimelech guy that we all hate. Let's get rid of him. I'm not scared of him. He's drunk. He's like, I'll go to battle. And what is Zebul? Again, he just pointed this out, Abimelech's officer, the ruler of the city, hears the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed. His anger was kindled. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come up to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now, therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. So he warns Abimelech what's going on. He says, look, there's an insurrection coming up. They're going to foment insurrection against you. They're gonna come after you. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do. So Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies. Israel is now in full-on civil war. Shechem, one of its cities, is fighting against Abimelech, the king in Israel. And they get up, he divides his men into four companies, and they divide up, and they basically surround the city of Shechem. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, goes out in the morning, stood at the entrance to the gate of the city, and Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. This is a great mental picture for me. Like, Gaal gets up in the morning, it's a beautiful day in Israel, it's sunny, much like today. Not too hot, not too cold, just perfect. He gets himself a cup of coffee and his mug. He walks out to the gate of the city, and he's just sipping his cup of coffee. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zabel, look, people are coming down from the mountaintops. And Zabel says to him, you mistake the shadow of mountains for men. He's drinking his coffee. He's like, I think there's some guys up there. And Zabel's like, who knows that Abimelech's coming? He's the one who warned him. He's like, nah, it's just shadows. Like, you know how you see clouds go by and you see the shadow like move across the mountaintop? He's like, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. You're fine. And Gaal takes another couple sips. He looks up and he speaks again and said, no, look, people are coming down from the center of the land. One company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak. And Zabel says to him, where is your mouth now, you who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these people the people whom you despised? You want to fight? Go out now and fight with them. So you got Gaal looking at the mountain. He's got people coming down the center. He's got people coming from the diviner's oak. He's got people coming on every side. And Zabel, knowing what's going on, is like, you wanted to fight? He's here to fight. And Gaal went out to the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many fell wounded, up all the way up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived at Arumah, and Zabel drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell at Shechem. Now, in this case, Gaal kind of brought it on himself, but it is still the second time in this story where we see Shechem, a place where it is meant to be a safe place of refuge for people who are in trouble, putting somebody out because somebody wants them dead. It's supposed to be going the other way around. And on the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told. He took his people and divided them into three companies and set an ambush in the fields. And he looked and saw the people coming out of the city. He rose against them and killed them. Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, while the two companies rushed upon all who were in the field and killed them. So after dealing with Gaal and his insurrection, now Abimelech is also wiping out all the people that Shechem had already sent out to ambush him in the fields. He's like, all right, we're dealing with this problem, we're going to deal with this problem too. So he sends people out to attack them in the field, but he also sends people to the gate of the city so that when they flee from the fields to try to get back into the city, he's got men waiting there too, wipes them out, right? Abimelech is holding court, and everyone is guilty. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He captured the city and killed the people who were in it, and he razed the city and sowed it with salt. When all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Berith, and Abimelech was told that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. So the leaders all come together to this stronghold, this tower, because Abimelech has destroyed the city. Sowed it with salt means that not only is he destroying the crops for this year that they would have needed to live and to eat, but by sowing it with salt, nothing will grow next year either. He is guaranteeing that anybody who survives the initial attack will starve to death within the next 2 years. He is going to town. And Abimelech goes up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bundle of brushwood and took it up and laid it on his shoulder. So he gets this bundle of wood, puts it on his shoulder. And he says to the men who were with him, what you have seen me do, getting this wood, hurry and do as I have done. So his whole army's out there. They're all gathering these bundles of wood. So every one of the people cut down his bundle and following Abimelech, put it against the stronghold, the tower where everybody was gathered. And they set the stronghold on fire over them so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. Abimelech is trying to wipe these people off the face of the earth. Their leaders have retreated he's already destroyed the city. He's made sure anybody who survives will starve to death. The leaders have come together. Those who did survive came together in this tower, and he burns the tower to the ground. And he's not done. Abimelech, this evil, evil man, went to Thebes and encamped against Thebes and captured it. But there was a strong tower within the city, and all the men and women and all the leaders of the city fled to it and shut themselves in. And they went up to the roof of the tower. And Abimelech came to the tower and fought against it and drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. So he goes on to the next city. He's done with Shechem. He's moving on to Thebes. He gets to Thebes, does the same thing, kills everybody. Leaders of the city flee to the tower, the place where they're supposed to have refuge. And Abimelech's like, we've seen this movie before. We know how this ends. gets a whole bunch of wood, throws it against the tower. He is all ready to burn another tower, another 1,000 men and women. He is going to wipe them out. And a certain woman throws the upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. I love the turn of events here. He's like, we're going to get this. And this woman just goes, whoop, nails him on his head, kills him dead. All right. Then he calls quickly to his young men, armor bearer, and says to him, draw your sword and kill me. So she didn't kill him dead. She killed him almost dead. And he says, draw your sword and kill me, and lest they say of me, a woman killed him. And his young men thrust him through, and he died. So Abimelech, at the hands of people near Shechem, is going to die. So Jotham's prophecy is coming true. And what's just truly glorious about this, these two verses is this woman throws this millstone or this stone down, hits him on the head, almost kills him. He's like to his young man, kill me so that no one will say that a woman killed me. And yet here we are, 4,000 years later, looking at scripture going, hey, a woman killed him. Like, that didn't work for him the way he thought it was going to do. But his young man thrust him through, and Abimelech is wiped out. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, everyone departed to his home. Thus, God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father, killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return on their heads. And upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal. So even in this story, this epilogue to Gideon's story, before we move on to the next judge, we still reach the end and we see this point. Through Abimelech's evil, through all of the evil of the men of Shechem, even as everything is going wrong in the nation of Israel, it is still God who is in control through all of it. And it is not Jotham who goes out and gets revenge. It is God who returns the evil that Abimelech put out there. It is God who makes the evil of Shechem, the evil men of Shechem, face judgment for what they did. Through it all, God is the one in control, no matter what it looks like to the people in Israel. And that brings us to our so what. I totally thought I fixed this slide. All right, you get to see every there. I'm going right on the front end. Great. First, legacy matters. Gideon did some great things in his life. But the second half of his life was pretty full of some pretty bad decisions. Audrey talked earlier about the millions and hundreds of millions decisions that we will make in our lifetime. Gideon made some pretty bad ones. And those bad decisions, at least one of them, led to the birth of Abimelech. And long after Gideon's death, that bad decision was still coming back to haunt him. Legacy matters. And the thing with legacy is so often we start thinking of legacy when we get older. We start thinking of what's going to go beyond my life. What are people going to say about me once I'm gone? We tend to start thinking about that when we're in our 70s, 80s, 90s. But the reality is you are making decisions right now that will affect the rest of your life. Teenagers, you make decisions as teenagers that will affect the rest of your life. Young adults in your 20s, 30s, you make decisions that will affect the rest of your life. Those of us who are parents, adults, grown-ups, I don't feel like a grown-up yet, but I feel like people are putting me in that category more and more, so I guess I'm a grown-up now. Like, we're making decisions that'll affect the rest of our life, but not just ours. Those we choose to invest in, those who we choose to let invest in us, these decisions matter. And they can ultimately have effects long past the end of our lives. The person you choose to date, the person you choose to marry, the job you choose to take, the things that you choose to make priorities in your life, these are all things that will form who you are and make a difference in your life and others. Second, short-term circumstances do not dictate God's long-term plan. So often we can become distracted by the things that are going on around us. In the case of anybody living in Israel during Abimelech's rule, things looked pretty bad. But God was still in control through all of it. God was still the one who was taking care of Israel, who had a plan for Israel and a path for Israel. If your circumstances have you here this morning feeling like, man, I feel like I'm all alone, like God doesn't love me, God doesn't care about me, let me tell you, your circumstances, as dire as they look, do not mean that God has forsaken you. In fact, I don't think it's a coincidence that you're here in this church where I can say you can look around this room and see people who, even if they are only meeting you today for the first time, genuinely care about you and are glad that you are here. No matter how dire your circumstances look, you have people in this room who care about you. Your circumstances do not dictate God's long-term plans. And then finally, choose wisely who you follow. The men of Shechem put forth a terrible, terrible leader, someone who was not equipped or ready to lead them towards a God-honoring society. And what it ended up doing is plunging Israel into a civil war that cost thousands and thousands of lives. I am not saying that we are going to make that bad of a decision this week as far as leadership is concerned, but do know that the people you choose to allow into your life to tell you where you're going, what you're doing, whether that be your pastor, your church leadership, your boss at work, where you choose to work, choose wisely whom you choose to follow. Because at the end of the day, the person you're following is the one who chooses where you end up. I really wish all these sermons didn't end on like such a low point, but we are in the book of Judges and that was what happened. So next week I'll try to come up with a joke or something. I don't know. But would you pray with me as we just round this out? God, I thank you that you give us stories like the book of Judges to remind us that you are still in control. You are still the God of the universe, even when everything seems to be just flying off the handle. Father, I pray that we can learn from others' mistakes and just learn to cherish you and choose to make you the leader. Choose to follow you and to put you first in our lives. Father, if we're going to make hundreds of millions of decisions in our lives, I pray that we would choose to put you first in every single decision we make. Because Father, you want what's best for us, and we truly believe that. So let us choose what you want for us, even above what we want for us. Let us choose the leaders you want before we choose the leaders we want. And Father, we choose a relationship with you before anybody else. Pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.